grand opening in October and grand closing for the Horseshoe for this month. And Ohio State made the most of their one opportunity to play a Big Ten game. It's a homecoming game in this building in the Horseshoe, a Saturday night under the lights, and they beat the tar out of Minnesota 42-3. They moved to 5-0. They are still undefeated. They are still ranked number one in the country. And it's hard to find much to really scrutinize, Berm.
Yeah.
But we will. It's Snap Judgments. And he's Jeremy Birmingham. I am Austin Ward. And where would you like to begin?
So 39-3, or 39-point win.
Pretty good.
Against a 3-1 team that, you know, I'm not going to sit here and try to pretend that Minnesota has beat a murderer's row of opponents to get here. But you know what? They're 3-1. PJ Fleck knows how to get his guys motivated. They came out their first drive of the game. They looked like they had a plan. And then Ohio State said, stop doing that. And then they stopped doing that. And, you know, we are allowed to nitpick. If Ryan Day is allowed to nitpick in his press conference,
well, it's a great
point.
We
are allowed to nitpick on Snap Judgments, but I don't have that much to nitpick. Obviously, I don't agree with one call in this game, the decision to call a timeout and replace your quarterback and then run the quarterback that everyone knows you're going to run. But that's the play Ryan Day was pissed off about afterwards, not because of the functionality of it, but because he says Lincoln Keenholz went to the wrong gap.
He was very upset in the moment.
We have never, I've covered Ryan Day now for 8 years. I've been covering this team since 2012 on a week in, week out basis. I don't know that I've ever seen a coach after a win get that, like you could start to see, you know, the commercial when like the guy starts to turn red from the toes up. Like Ryan Day, responding to your question about, you know, did he sense something going wrong midweek, and that's why he was reiterating this hungry and desperate mantra. And then he started talking about the things that went wrong tonight, and it's like, man, that is a tough life, because they you know, his point was, and it almost felt like a direct conversation to himself from last year, like to say, if you shouldn't, it shouldn't take a loss to make you realize that things are not right. And that's it's a conversation that we heard all throughout the last week in Happy Valley about, well, the Buckeyes lost last year. We're going to bounce back from that Oregon loss. And then that team went to L.A. today and crapped the bed against a winless UCLA team. And it is a reminder, and I hope people appreciate how flipping difficult it is to win every game.
It's very hard. And I do think it was really interesting on a number of fronts, as we always say on Snap Judgments. No mistakes. Ryan Day knew that the microphone was live. Yeah. He was sending a message. Whether that was
well, he said, screw it. I'm going to say it.
He did, and that's when I was like, oh, this is going to be really fascinating, spicy. And I'm probably going to be talking about it nonstop for the next week, or at least I'm going to be thinking about it. Because you said maybe it was a message to himself. Probably true. The names that were mentioned were Bo Jackson and Lincoln Keenholz. We already saw that on the field as soon as Lincoln Keenholz came over the sideline. You're supposed to go to the A-gap. He bounced it outside. It didn't work. Now, he said, gave him another chance. Quoted Dumb and Dumber, which also I didn't expect from Ryan Day. All told, I would say that was one of the more interesting post-game press conferences from Ryan Day ever.
Yeah, in a 39-point win. Like that's...
Given the swing of emotions there. So, and you know, Bo Jackson, that he needed to take better care of the football, even though he didn't actually fumble on the play that he was referencing. But those, it was a reminder that the times when you hear Ryan Day say, I don't want to weigh in on some of this stuff until I see the film, he doesn't need that. When he goes in, like those were the plays that were immediately in his mind. And there was a lot, which is why I didn't know that it would be edgy Ryan Day postgame press conference, because they beat Minnesota. I know he respects PJ Fleck. They beat them handily. They played the third
almost
game.
Almost 500 yards to 150.
Third game out of five already this year where Ohio State did not allow a touchdown. Like, that's nuts. That doesn't happen. And he's like, you can feel really good. It's like, oh, thanks to the fans for coming out. It was homecoming. Only opportunity in the Horseshoe in this month. Like, great job. And then we know that the issues are there and we'll get them fixed. But it was not that. And I think that is significant.
It's also a reminder of how crazy it is what these coaches are able to witness during the game. All this happening, and Ryan Day notices Bo Jackson reaching a ball out on second down.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's a kid who's a freshman trying to get an extra yard, and Ryan Day, like, don't. And I think Ryan is so regularly, like, castigated by fan bases around the country and people who want to claim make claims about him and being born on third base and blah, blah, blah. He's the winningest coach in the history of college football as of tonight, passing Newt Rockne for the best winning percentage in college history. Doesn't count because he has only coached for 7 years instead of 10. But
how does it not count?
I don't know.
Who determines that it doesn't count?
I don't know. Probably, I think it was probably like Nathan Rockne, like Newt's long-lost twin.
Shame on you, Nathan.
Nathan. But like
7 years of football is a large enough sample size. Let's be real.
Very, very good at this job. And it's so awesome to watch his evolution into this guy who is now quoting the Navy SEALs in a post-game press conference when they won 39 points and said, if you think you've got it, you're about to get got.
That's when you get it.
That is like, I believe. Like, man, like what? Like, that is straight up Urban Meyer, right? Like, that is a different element to Ryan Day's personality than we've ever seen. And that post-game press conference for a game you win by 39 points is going to be it's going to stick in my head for a while, because that is not what I would have anticipated from Ryan Day post-game.
No, because he could have said, well, here's the everyone wanted to see Ohio State push the football down the field, and Julian Sain was unleashed, and Carnell Tate was breaking records, and Jeremiah Smith was unguardable when the Buckeyes wanted to throw the football his way. Over 300 yards passing for Julian Sain, the next step in his development. You saw that. You want to be upset about special teams? Watch this trick play. Have Brandon Ennis go out there and lateral and throw a ball across the field on a punt to spring one for 40 yards of field position, throwing it back to Lorenzo Styles, making a play happen. Boom, there you go. You want to see something great on defense? Well, get used to it. This is five straight weeks of it from Ohio State. And they, like, in all three phases, you could point to that and say, well, that's something that I would say 90%, if not 99.9% of coaches would go say, hey, it was 42-3. Yeah,
pretty good.
This, we're going to go in and we're going to get ready for Illinois. We'll watch the film and maybe we'll find some things that we're not happy with, and we'll correct those on the practice field on a bloody Tuesday. Ryan Day was starting on that immediately, which maybe is just a quirk of playing a night game the week before you go play 11 a.m. Central Time, that you want to get that started immediately and set the tone. And I would get all that, but it may also be a peek into the psyche of him.
He was doing an extra post-game interview with Dom Tiberi of 10TV, and even that interview, Ryan was extremely animated. Like, the juices are still going for him tonight. I think he's going to probably get home and cut on that film right away.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that.
That guy has some well-deserved beers in his future tonight and a lot of football to watch. But it's also,
you think he mixes them?
Probably not. Just probably one beer. You know, why would he mix two beers?
I mean, mixing film and beer.
Oh, I hope so. Why would you not?
Because he's a coach and you're berm.
Yeah.
Well, it's fine for you. You're not trying to make corrections.
Yeah, I'm not. But I think that this was a game where Ohio State, again, like you give up the opening drive. You feel like, hey, that's an interesting start for Minnesota. Buckeyes get the ball, look like they're moving it nice and easy, and then end up settling for a 52-yard field goal attempt, which misses to the left, and then they have to force a punt, get the ball back, score on the last play of the first quarter, scored twice there, scored twice in the fourth quarter in the same end zone, doing a replay assisted for Lincoln Keenhold's touchdown. I just think that the Buckeyes have realized that they have to learn to run the ball. They tried. They did not run it. Minnesota, again, we talked about it all week, the number four ranked run defense in the country. They held the Buckeyes in check pretty much until James Peoples got in the game in the fourth quarter, who, yep. Kudos to him for not taking a demotion the wrong way. Like, he ran the ball better tonight than he's run it all season long, and he was doing it behind the Buckeyes' backup offensive line, so yep. He deserves a lot of credit for that. You know, this is a game where you saw what defenses have to deal with when you play Ohio State, because how do you defend all these guys? Max Clair had his Ohio State career high, 5 catches, including, I know people hate snap judgment because I jump around, but that throw by Julian Sain getting drilled in the chest, just lobbing it down the field, I don't think it was actually for Max Clair. I think it was for somebody behind him.
I think it was. They showed a replay on the NBC broadcast that I watched in the press box. I'm like, because I thought the same thing as you.
Yeah, there were two guys.
Two guys. But it looked like on the replay from behind that was where Julian was trying to go, which made it even more impressive to me. Because if he wasn't, and then it got And he's so accurate. Yeah. That's also why I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt. Yeah. Like, it'd be weird for him even getting hit to be 10 yards off his target.
I just thought he's been so good. And now you have to figure out how do you justify double teaming Jeremiah Smith that much if Carnell Tate is going to be that good? And then you add in the other pieces, and you'll see it on the notebook when it runs at 3 a.m. or whatever tonight, or whenever you get a chance to watch it, America. But Jeremiah Smith saying, next time is Brandon Ennis's turn. Like, Ryan Day went into a full-on diatribe about how unselfish his receivers are and what it means to this program to have these guys not care who gets the football and who's going to go out there getting success. This team is still figuring out the identity, but tonight, 500 yards against Minnesota is pretty good defense. I know, again, we expected that the Buckeyes would be able to throw the ball against them, but it looked super easy, like way too easy.
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of factors for that. We never talk about the pass protection. It's been very good. Julian Sain is getting better and better and better, more confident. Brian Hartline, Ryan Day, Billy Fessler are all giving him more responsibility and letting him continue to grow on the job. That's about all. 23 for 27. I mean, his accuracy.
He's on like a one incompletion per quarter pace this season, I think.
Well, that was the pace tonight for sure. There was only, I think, one throw tonight where it was like, maybe not. It was the heat check down there in the red zone where he's like, can I fit this slant in between three defenders? And it turns out he couldn't on that occasion. It didn't cost him anything, didn't cost Ohio State anything, but it is an all-encompassing, I don't know, it's, we throw around the Death Star terminology, maybe it's too cliche, but as you mentioned, when you have Jeremiah Smith and Carnell Tate, and like Brandon Ennis doesn't have to be a regular factor in your offense, that's crazy. And Max Clair, is you see him starting to grow in confidence, that Julian Sain is looking his way. You're seeing a lot of, you know, running that same route that we saw in the first game against Texas, and the timing was better against Washington, and it was really good again tonight against Minnesota. Like, that they're continuing to build and build and build, and that's got to be a scary thought, because as you mentioned, teams are going to have to figure out what to do. And I felt like tonight, with the volume of targets that were going Carnell Tate's way, and they weren't just like, here's the play action and hits the post, that's Carnell's route. He caught a slant and then made a ton of people miss with yards after the catch. They had him schemed up. He had another insane toe-tapping grab along the sideline. He also caught a deep ball off of Ohio State, adding another wrinkle to the offense. They did a play action where they faked the end around, and they had some, you know, different eye candy, and that's just got to be pure torture to be an opposing defensive coordinator and try and account for all of that. But
what's funny, because on that play, Minnesota just turned it over on fourth and one. Ohio State has the ball at the 44. Minnesota is prepared. They're thinking the Buckeyes are going to try something here. They're going to try some splash play. And then they see Jeremiah in motion, and they're like, oh, hell yeah, we got this. And then, nope,
not going to get us this time.
Actually, he didn't cover Carnell Tate on that play. And, you know, the second touchdown from Julian Sain to Jeremiah Smith down here, it was an RPO that, like, he just pulled it back and threw an absolute dart. And these are the pieces of the puzzle now for Ohio State's offense that are starting to come together. Next week in Illinois is going to be a different test. They're a step up in competition Big Ten-wise, and they, you know, got themselves back on track after getting embarrassed against Indiana. But this whole team can just do whatever it wants because the defense is so good. But tonight, like, you see pieces and you're like, well, if these guys aren't healthy, if this isn't healthy, then all of a sudden you start to be like, well, now the offense has to kick up the pace. And, you know, the short passing game, the little stuff to Carnell Tate, that's a lot easier to do if you can throw it deep, if you can stretch the field. And so great game plan by Brian Hartline and Ryan Day and Billy Fessler and Tyler Bowen. And, you know, 500 yards to 150, that's going to win you a lot of games.
Yeah, I wonder, you mentioned the health for Ohio State defensively. I wonder if you – maybe that's sprinkling it into the Ryan Day intensity pot, because – you know, Kenyatta Jackson was just in shorts leaving here. We saw him.
He looked like a stinger. It was probably a concussion, I assume.
He got up a little bit wobbly. It didn't look like the hardest hit. I know that doesn't matter.
He bent his head in a weird way.
But it didn't, you know, he was down immediately. And then when he stood up, he kind of, you know, rocked a little bit back and forth, had to be helped to the tent. They took away his helmet. He did not return to that game. The second time that's happened this year for Kenyatta Jackson. So maybe that is part of it. Edric Houston up this ramp before the game was over yet again. It looks like that, you know, left ankle continues to be of some bother to him. I actually thought before like early in the game, a couple plays, maybe early in the third quarter, like it looked like he was really flying around.
I thought he played really well.
I thought that that was the best he'd played all year and that he was ready to take that next step. And so two things that you have to monitor there health-wise, and it can have a ripple effect because we saw CJ Hicks tonight, you know, come into the stadium. He went through warm-ups, but he didn't have the full pads on and he never had his helmet at any point during the game. You know, there's an opportunity there where Ohio State looked like maybe they could be starting a plan for the future or CJ Hicks planning for the future. You know, we would assume that would be together for both of them, but he could be potentially retaining a redshirt season if he doesn't play again during the regular season. I mean, I guess in this world you could play in the playoff, but then still come back next year. I don't even know how all that works.
He could play eight games and still redshirt.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, that's a wild scenario. But anyway, that's potentially out there where, you know, those pieces could be affected by what's going on with Kenyatta Jackson and his health, which that stuff is not fun. It's just a way of roster management in the year 2025, which again, maybe why there's this like edginess, I'm using Ryan Day's own term for it. Like that was what it felt like. That was a sandpaper press conference.
I believe probably something similar happening with Malik Hartford as well, looking at opportunities to start next year and retain some time. We'll see. Again, the reality is you don't know. I mean, if Kenyatta Jackson has a long-term issue or other guys go down, CJ Hicks is going to have to play. So this is now, it's like in progress. It's like the little bar, like what we're one quarter of the way through it. So there's six games left to play, seven games left to play for CJ in this regular season. And the goal, I think, clearly is to not have him play, but we'll see.
Yeah. It's another dynamic that we'll have to pay attention to week in,
which is great for him and Ohio State. I asked him, I'm going to be straight up, Doc.
Yo!
Straight up, I asked CJ prior to the season if he would ever consider that because of the fact that he's moving positions and the new defense and learning all this stuff and then trying to figure out how do you get into the rotation. And his response then was, I don't think so. It's not something I want to do. I believe that when you start to really situate and sort out the options for a player like him, CJ has not done enough on this field to get drafted. So if you can return to Ohio State for year five and make a couple $100,000 to or more and retain the title of Captain Buckeye and help yourself because you get an extra year of Matt Patricia's defense and you get an extra year of learning how to be – like he can be the edge style that they're using Arvell Reese for this year. Now, he can't, maybe isn't the off-ball linebacker that Arvell is turning into, but the speed rush, the pass rush, the guy who you can just put up at the line of scrimmage and say, go do some stuff, CJ can be that guy, but he can be better. And I think it's a really mature decision for a guy, a young man that has a child. Like, that's a tough decision, and I hope people support him in it because that is not easy to do.
Yeah. That plan could be disrupted at a moment's notice. You know, I think that heading into this next week, I talked about the challenge of this road test even before the season started. Going to Illinois was not going to be a walk in the park. You know, sometimes you can chalk it up to bad Illinois teams and distraction and weird weather and wind tunnels. This is a good Illinois team. They got absolutely embarrassed a couple weeks ago against Indiana. They have righted that ship and strung together a couple wins that have been impressive, beating USC, cruising against Purdue. If you want to discount that, so be it. But they've done everything since then to put this back into the challenge category. You know that they're going to play physically next week. You know that I believe personally that they're very well coached.
And Luke Altmyer might be one of the two or three best quarterbacks Ohio State will play all year. So if you don't have the pass rush, if you don't have some of this defensive line stuff that you need.
Or you can't stop the run. I mean, I think that's going to be a huge emphasis for these guys this week. And you're still looking. Again, we'll see what's going on with Edric Houston and the ankle. And as this has lingered now for several weeks or in some respects back to the start of training camp with him, dealing with his health, which I think we kind of glossed over at one point late in camp that, oh, he's just going to be fine. I don't know for sure that it's tied or related to that, but it certainly lines up enough pieces that you could make that assumption.
I've heard football's a physical game.
It's a very physical game. And playing it against Ohio State doesn't seem like it is very fun for opponents. Five of them have tried so far this year. They've all five lost. This one, Minnesota Golden Gophers, They lost 42-3 on Saturday night for some homecoming festivities in the Horseshoe. Last time this month that we're going to be in here, this time next week, well, not at this exact time, but next Saturday, we'll have some snap judgments from Illinois as the Buckeyes head to Champaign for game number 6, their second Big Ten road game. This was the first one in this building, and they handled it as easily as they possibly could have. Thanks for joining us for snap judgments on a Saturday night. 42-3, Buckeyes are winners. He's Berm. I'm Austin. We'll talk to you guys again on Monday.